Welcome to the Check Out California Radio Show, your key to California hospitality. Hosted by Rad Gantos, principal of Rad Gantos & Associates, a hospitality and commercial real estate design firm, and Craig Sullivan, executive vice president of Parkwest GC, a hospitality and commercial real estate general contractor. Check Out California is focused on our state's hospitality, travel, and tourism markets, and on the large part they play in California's vibrant and innovative economic diversity and unique quality of life. Now, here are your hosts, Rad Gantos and Craig Sullivan.
Good afternoon and welcome to Check Out California. I'm Craig Sullivan.
And I'm Rad Gantos.
We've got a very special show today. We've got Mr. Robert Rycroft, the CFO of Broughton Hotels, in the room with us. We've also got Bill Bracken, our very special guest of Bracken's Kitchen. And then Nancy Nguyen from Park West General Contractors. She is the glue that runs that company. So thank you all for tuning in. And I understand we have a couple of new viewers today. We've got Danny Gewurz and the Hunter Hotel Group out in the San Fernando Valley, and Duran Lalani from Westmont Hospitality out in Texas tuning in today. Appreciate that, guys.
Nationwide,
but we're over here in California. Bill, thank you so much for joining us today. You're one of those unsung heroes in the hospitality sector that you were the executive chef at both the Four Seasons and I'm drawing a blank. Peninsula Hotels. Then you started Bracken's Kitchen, and I know you're about ready to celebrate your fifth anniversary, but would you kindly give our audience an overview of Bracken's Kitchen?
Absolutely. First and foremost, thanks so much for having me on today. It's a pleasure to be here. Bracken's Kitchen, like you just said, we're about ready to start or celebrate our fifth anniversary, so that's pretty neat as I look back. Starting a nonprofit at 49 years of age, having never run a nonprofit, I didn't know if I'd make it through year one or two, but here we are 5 years later, so that's pretty neat. You know, when I started this nonprofit, like I said, not knowing anything about nonprofits, I felt a strong urge and calling to go out and make a difference and start Bracken's Kitchen, a nonprofit 501c3 hunger relief organization. And having spent my entire adult life in luxury hotels, you know, five-star, five-diamond hotels, I knew that I wanted to do something different than every other soup kitchen or food bank that's handing out food. I wanted to continue to cook the way I always did. I joke all the time that I'm not cooking with foie gras and lobster and caviar so much anymore. But every now and then we get some pretty neat donations in. But I'm not cooking the same foods, but I'm cooking the same way. And that was really the impetus that started Bracken's Kitchen. And there was a lot of history that led up to it. But today we're here with our food truck and our recovered food program and soon to launch culinary training program, trying to make a difference in Southern California and eventually beyond.
Give us a little background on that history, Bill. Because I know you volunteered before you set up your own nonprofit, right? You were involved
absolutely.
In other efforts, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a chef in the hospitality business, as you know, the hospitality business is probably one of the most giving out there. And, you know, our business comes to the rescue all the time. And, you know, as a chef in luxury hotels, while we had nice, beautiful kitchens to work in, we never missed the opportunity to go out and do a fundraising event here or there somewhere and get out of our own kitchen and do something fun. But we were doing what we loved and raising money for people. But, you know, really getting out there and get your hands and feet dirty and volunteering is a little bit different. You know, part of my story was, you know, working through the downturn in the economy and watching a lot of really good people lose their jobs and struggling just to put a meal on the table. I mean, people that still had a nice suit to put on and had a car to drive, but they couldn't even pay their rent and couldn't find a job. And they were literally, you know, not even a paycheck away from being evicted because they didn't have a paycheck. You know, that's when I was compelled to do something to try to make a difference, but I didn't. You know, I was too wrapped up in trying to survive the same the economy downtown, that we all were. And one day I was thrust into the lines of the unemployed, and that was really when I knew I was being called. And unlike so many of my friends that I saw lose their jobs, I was okay financially. I had a nice severance package, and I've always been pretty conservative and didn't need a lot of money. But, you know, when I find myself unemployed at 48 years of age, I think it was back then, and a wife and a 2-year-old son at home. It's scary. But I knew it was my calling, and took me a while to really figure that out. I did a lot of volunteer work at Orange County Rescue Mission and really did a lot of research in trying to figure out what hunger looks like in Orange County and how do you address it and how do you try to make a difference and really leverage what I believe in, the power of food, to make a difference in someone's life.
So what does hunger look like in Orange County?
Looks like you and me. I mean, it really does. Yes. People don't realize that. I mean, our typical view here in America is that guy living under the overpass on the side of the freeway with the sign, "We'll work for food." But, you know, food insecurity in Orange County, you know, one of the things I talk about all the time is one of the key factors that I kind of define what we deal with is a report that comes out every year or every 2 years. The last report, the 22nd annual report on the conditions of children in Orange County,
yeah.
It came out with the fact that 48% of all children in Orange County are on the government-subsidized free and reduced lunch plan.
Wow.
Called SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance.
One out of two.
Yeah.
Just let that sink in.
Yeah. I mean,
an affluent community, you know, like Orange County, 49% or 48% basically are on SNAP.
And you go to L.A., it jumps up to 59%. I mean, so, and, you know, my kid goes to, I got an 8-year-old now. He's 2 when I lost my job, but 8 now. And he goes to school, and you don't know what kids are getting. Mm-hmm. Help, you know,
you
get a meal from lunch. You don't know what family's struggling. And again, we have this typical view because we got, you know, this view of Orange County, the coast,
right.
You know, Newport Beach. We're in South Coast Plaza here. It's a beautiful setting. And you go up Bristol about 3 miles and take a right turn on 17th Street, and you're right in the middle of it all. And it breaks my heart every time I think about these families and these kids. These aren't people living under the overpass. These are families just the working poor, struggling just to get by.
And, you know, and that goes back, you know, decades at this point. Misty Copeland is an example. I mean, you know, probably this country's premier ballerina. As an early teen or, you know, just about to become a teenager, her and her mom were living in a motel here off the 405 in Orange County.
Yeah.
And luckily, she met a teacher, you know, ballet teacher that took an interest and look where she is today.
Yeah.
And that's part of the thing with the hospitality industry. And when I... Bill's got a video up on YouTube, Bracken's Kitchen. You need to see it. It's moving. It's authentic. Bill is another one of these, again, I said this earlier, an unsung hero in this industry. Part of the DNA, see, I used it again, in our
Every
industry
show.
Is to give back. You know, we're the first ones there when there's a fire, you know, an earthquake, a flood, any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
Bill's been doing this for nearly 5 years now, and with 48% of the children in this county, Orange County, California, being on SNAPs, we need to do better, folks. We really do.
Yeah.
And we can. We're capable of that. And luckily, we've got these unsung heroes like Bill and various other people in our community that are, you know, bringing this to the forefront and helping. And I really want to hear about the culinary part that you're starting, because now, I mean, you're already giving these people – one skill, and that's, you know, what to eat, how to eat it, and, you know, instead of getting something from a fast food place that's really not natural.
Well,
hold
on a second. I want to hear about 5 years ago, he sets up a nonprofit. Okay, finds himself.
Okay. Your question.
You're
first.
Like, okay, I'm today, here, and now. No.
I told you it was all on the fly.
This is why it's live radio. But no, I really want to hear, because I think what you said, which I didn't know, is that there was a personal motivation, something that caused you found yourself in a situation, and you chose to look outside of yourself. Volunteer at the rescue mission, and then basically realize that, kind of connect the dots, your experience in culinary at a certain level and the way that this was being provided as a service for those who are in need, that maybe there was a calling to do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set out to do this, which, again, reminding people, yes, you had a little bit of a cushion, but you were basically unemployed at the time. That is actually different. Some people may choose to deal with their unemployment in a different manner, right? You chose to put it out that way and kind of motivate yourself to act in that way. But how did you start? Like, you set up, you have a truck now, you're setting up a culinary educational component, but how did it start, Bill?
Well, you know, Rad, first and foremost, don't give me too much credit at all, please. I mean,
I want to know what I want to know.
I mean, first of all, I'm a man of faith, and I really feel I was called, but my faith was... light at best going through this. It was a tough journey, and I struggled with this idea of doing something, and I got a family to pay, provide for. My wife didn't work, and I had some cushion, but I mean, my whole life I was a slave to money. I didn't need a fancy car, a fancy home, but this fear of being able to provide for my family that is deeply rooted in my childhood and the tough times my parents went through. So it's very emotional, very personal for me in many ways. I people call me an unsung hero. I'm just a guy.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot, Bill.
No, it's good.
I think there's that part of the story that doesn't come out sometimes that what you just shared is very powerful. Yeah. And for people that are out there, they're feeling that they cannot basically be involved, that they cannot make a difference. Should encourage people to actually do that.
Well, you know, and
hopefully
we all hear so many stories about people losing jobs and careers, and especially midlife. I guess 48 was midlife.
Yeah. 50, you're considered senior. Yeah.
Okay, but, all I could land on is that old saying, you get dealt a bucket of lemons, you make lemonade, so what can I do with this? And, you know, we played with this idea of a for-profit restaurant feeding the less fortunate. I built a business plan around something called Let Us Feed. Let Us Eat. And it was going to be a sandwich and salad shop, which is all the popularity now here in Southern California, from the green leaf chop shops to, tender greens. And I was making, I spent my whole life in luxury hotels. So I was holding on at every ounce of strength to that world and that life I used to have. How can I, answer my calling, but still do what I love, cook? And, we had this idea of a restaurant, build a business plan. Two of the biggest things, a couple of big things we landed on. One of them was this restaurant business plan called Let Us Eat. There's this big restaurant empire out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Maybe you heard them called Let Us Entertain You.
Right.
Has successfully fought every single lawsuit ever and won about anybody put the name lettuce in anything.
Anything. Wow.
So it's like, okay, that ruined our whole plan. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, is here we are, to have a successful restaurant that could give back. Location is so important. Yeah. So could you imagine someplace here in South Coast Metro, Fashion Island, Newport Beach, wherever it is, you put a nice restaurant, and then we were going to morph into evenings and weekends, certain nights of the week, Let Us Feed, from Let Us Eat to Let Us Feed, mm-hmm. open the doors for the mm-hmm. less fortunate, provide meals, and it's a reality. Suddenly you got 100 homeless people lined up outside of a restaurant in a prominent area. They're going to have problems.
Absolutely.
So we really realized, the more important than that is you got a family who's struggling just to get by, and we want to help them by offering free meals. And, we're going to ask them to drive across county, bus pass, car, transportation, gasoline, whatever, just to get
there. Logistics of it. Yeah.
Any money they saved by getting a free meal from us, they just wasted getting across the county.
Sure.
So, after 25 years of having a nice office in a 5-star hotel, suddenly my office was Starbucks, and I'm sitting at the one in Fountain Valley, and the food truck goes by, and it's like ding, 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 light bulbs go off. Okay, we'll bring the food to them. And, we really set out 2014, we were working on our business plans, and set out 2015 was going to be this big fundraising year. We're going to buy our first truck. I want a brand new, fancy, shiny one. I wanted one of those with all the bells and whistles. After all, I've been in luxury hospitality my whole life.
Where's all the new equipment, right?
I wasn't going to buy some rundown Roach coach or something. But 2014 was end of 2014 was pretty exciting time. Catering company in L.A. called Bruce's Catering. Long story with that. We don't have time to go through all that. But suddenly Bruce gave us Betsy. And Bruce has a motion picture catering company, and he's got a dozen food trucks that he goes on sets of TV shows and everything. Right. And Betsy was his first truck. And I didn't even know she was Betsy until we went to pick her up. It was just the old red food truck. I never named my cars. A lot of guys name their cars. That's my wife has named every vehicle she's ever driven. I'm not sure I get that. But suddenly now my 8-year-old names every car in our house. So everything.
See, that's just karma.
But, so suddenly we had Betsy. And, Betsy, we really played with the name of it. And we loved the name and put her on the side of the truck. And she became part of the family. And the neat thing about Betsy that really, karma, God, fate, whatever you think is. Betsy used to feed the same people I used to feed in Beverly Hills. She was on the set of Grey's Anatomy and The Walking Dead and all these things. So, Patrick Dempsey, put something out on social media about us a while back, and Betsy used to feed Patrick Dempsey on the set of Grey's Anatomy. Guess who used to feed Patrick Dempsey at the Peninsula of Beverly Hills? We both kind of hung, Betsy and I both kind of hung up our our hats and former careers to do something more meaningful. So that was,
Great story.
So here we are in 2014 with the food truck, and we had a little bit of money in the bank. We did a nice bucket challenge before we got swamped by ALS, and we had a food truck and some money, so let's start feeding people. And it's the best thing and the worst thing that ever happened, because we haven't stopped since then, and now we're playing catch-up on all a lot of the foundational things that we should have done,
yeah.
you know, to get ready. But we're in a great place now, and, you know, we're making a difference.
It's part of the nonprofit experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You learn as you go. We're going to take a break here in a bit, but so you basically are operating out of where? You just out of the food truck? Or
no, we have a big commercial kitchen spot, shared kitchen in Huntington Beach. It's called Hana Kitchens, and there's, you know, a dozen or so tenants that work out of that. Kind of like, you know, here, we got the cool food halls in Southern California. You got the Hood Kitchen in Costa Mesa, and you got 4th Street Market and East End Kitchen over in Santa Ana. We're a pretty big commercial kitchen. People, they're producing. So Betsy's Park there. We work there all the time, not only with Betsy, but our recovered food program, working on the culinary training program that we'll talk about later. And, you know, we're there 5 days a week in the kitchen, sometimes six, sometimes seven.
Bill, let's give people the website while we're going through break. Maybe they'll start looking at the website. Where can they find more information?
Absolutely. www.brackenskitchen.org.
Spell it
Brackens, B-R-A-C-K-E-N-S, kitchen, K-I-T-C-H-E-N.org.
Great. So check that out while we take a break, and we'll be right back with Bill Brecken.
Thank you.
From Eureka to San Diego and Malibu to Bakersfield, the California Lodging Investment Conference, CLIC, is a one-of-a-kind, focusing exclusively on our Golden States hotel market. CLIC was launched in 2016 by Craig Sullivan, a seasoned hospitality industry professional, to harness the knowledge of our industry leaders, support our community, and educate emerging talent. CLIC brings together lodging professionals from California and beyond for one day of learning, professional development, and networking. If you are an owner-operator, investor, broker, developer, lender, management company, brand, or professional services provider, you should plan on attending CLIC 2 on March 8, 2018 at the Hilton Irvine Orange County Airport. We invite you to check out the California Lodging Investment Conference website at clicconference.com for the latest details and sponsorship opportunities. Early registration now open. And as a listener of the Checkout California radio show, please make sure to use our exclusive discount code of CHECKOUTCA when registering for this one-of-a-kind California hospitality event that sold out in its very first year.
Okay, we're back with Bill Brecken from Brecken's Kitchen. I am Rod Gentis, and my co-host here,
Craig Sullivan,
had a question for Bill.
Bill, would you fill us in on your culinary school that you're developing at Brecken's Kitchen, please?
Absolutely. You know, we talk a lot about the power of food and the ability to truly connect people. You know, I share this often. We all sit in this room, and everyone share two of the most basic human needs for survival. Especially here in Southern California with the weather, those two basic needs are the need to breathe and the need to eat. Mm-hmm. The problem is air is free and food is not. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I for years, and coming back to this luxury hotel world, and, you know, I came to this opinion that there's nothing in this world that's more opinionated than food. Nothing evokes more passion and emotion than a person. When you got, you know, a famous movie star who will remain nameless because I wouldn't want to get your show in trouble, screaming at you at the top of their
lungs.
We're
already in trouble.
Then when you got Rambo screaming at you at the top of your lungs because his oatmeal was made with water instead of whole milk, it's like, dude, it's just food. I don't get it. But that's really the power that food has on someone. That's and right. We realized, you know, how we can connect with people on a really personal level with what we do. But the problem is, you know, as we were talking about earlier, we was out last night in Santa Ana, fed about 120 people healthy, nutritious meal, three-course meal. And they went home happy, hugs, high fives. But they woke up this morning, they were hungry again. Mm-hmm. Our work is so short-lived when it comes to feeding. So, you know, how can we have a bigger impact and how can we really change people's lives? And that's helping lift them out of poverty. And mm-hmm. the only way you Absolutely. Do that is education. It's the only thing. And, you know, I read a report yesterday that the I don't know if it's minimum or the average, whatever, but the income needed to afford a single one-bedroom apartment in Orange County is $2,750 an hour.
Yep.
And we all know in our business, hospitality, the average dishwasher is making about $9, $10 an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and they can work two jobs from morning to night washing dishes. And I
believe the number was something in the range of about $87,000 joint income for a family. You qualify for aid in Orange County.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And to your point,
yeah,
we're paying people begrudgingly $10 an hour, $9 an hour in certain roles, right? And I think what you're saying is teach them how to cook. It's like they teach them how to fish, right?
Robert brought that up earlier at lunch.
Give them a fish, you fed them for a day, teach them to fish, you fed them for a lifetime. Right. And to your question, Craig, it occurred to me in one of my many moments, I was out at Ross Street where we were last night, and I was looking at all these kids out there, 35, 40 kids in this after-school program, homeless kids. Someone told me once that I have a generation of kids in Santa Ana that called me Uncle Bill, and it really is true. These are kids that I joke I'm the only white boy widow uncle they'll ever know, but I love them all, and they're very near and dear to my heart. But it broke my heart a couple of years ago when I had one of these moments sitting there to realize that in 20, 30 years they're still going to be here. The difference is they're going to be parents, and it's going to be their kids in this mm-hmm. program, and they're coming to get a free meal. And how do we change that? And the only way you do that is education. So we're in the kitchen 5, 6, 7 days a week cooking all the time. I got anywhere from 4 to 8, 10, 12 volunteers in our kitchen all the time. It's like, hello. Bring people in here and give mm-hmm. them, culinary skills, basic culinary skills. Mm-hmm. Let's not send out dishwashers at $9 an hour. Let's get a cook at $15, $16 an hour mm-hmm. and start them on a path. The bare minimum is we give them life skills of how to take leftovers or this or that, and how to create a healthy, nutritious meal.
Is this a program you already have, or are you rolling out?
We've played with it. We've had some pilots, a couple people in. Right now we're talking to some other, pretty well-known and successful nonprofits here that do a lot of, workforce training. How do we really make this happen? I've been utterly shocked, and it's a learning process in the nonprofit world, some of the challenges. But there's people on a cooking school and a class and a curriculum. And I'm saying, no, some of my best employees I've ever worked with, people with six-figure incomes working in well-known hotels and resorts around Southern California, came to me as a dishwasher with no education.
Right.
And they learned on the job and they grew. Mm-hmm. We can do that. We can mm-hmm. groom people to have lives mm-hmm. and careers outside of poverty. It doesn't have to be a classroom study.
We used to call it apprenticeship.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Stages and all sorts of things.
Yeah, Paul, you got a question?
We got some people just keep tweeting different variations of things. I just want to clarify how the program works. Do you... You have a food truck.
Correct.
Do you sell food to anybody and then use that money to pay people, or do you get donations and free food and then prepare it and take it to people in need?
Yeah, our food truck we strictly use for feeding the less fortunate, so we never charge for food on our food truck. We do have, what we work on, our social enterprise. One of those things is called Catering for a Cause. Mm-hmm. So we offer catering service mostly to churches and other nonprofits. We're trying – this will be part of our culinary training program that we give them real on-the-job training and catering.
Yeah.
And so, we have 3 or 4 events coming up in the next month. So we have our own income stream, which is catering, but, we send out – we're average about 2,000 meals a week, hot, healthy, nutritious meals that go out without a charge to anybody.
So where the other variations of the questions are, I'm trying to sift through them and trying to put them in some category here. Where do you get the food and where do you serve the people? Do they know you're going to be there, or do you just randomly pull up?
How do they find out where you're
at? Yeah.
One of the reasons I realized that I had to do more than just volunteer and feed people when I went through this period is because of, I came from a town of 1,000 people in Kansas, and for me to sit on the corner of Wilshire and Santa Monica Boulevard in an office overlooking CAA Creative Artist Agencies, I never should have been there. It's only through the grace of God. And so I've had all these connections. So where do you get the food? Newport Meat Company, whose hat is over here, one of the premier meat companies in Southern California, a huge supporter. L.A. Specialty Produce Company, one of the premier produce companies. I've been a chef for 25 years in Southern California, so these people are so behind what we're doing. So we get tons of donations of food. We work on a recovered food program. We're a nonprofit like anybody. We beg, borrow. We don't steal.
Yep.
We survive on the donations and goodwills of others. We talk about time, talent, and treasure. Everybody mm-hmm. has something they can give. If it's just their time, great. If you have treasure, please write a check. If it's talent, come and join us. We're like any other nonprofit. Mm-hmm. We find
And then how do the people find you? Somebody's in need. Do you have predictable places at predictable times, or do you just show up randomly, or...
Betsy, before she came to me, I heard horror stories about how they would take her out on Thanksgiving in Skid Row in L.A. and Christmas time and feed breakfast. And the all-out wars that would break out when they ran out of food and they didn't have enough food to feed people. So, you know, sticking to my roots of luxury hospitality, we go out and put on events for people. We really want people to escape life for an hour or two. So we decided, and that, you know, that goes back to 2014. Suddenly we have a food truck that we didn't expect, and we have money. So, you know, the quickest and easiest way for us to get out there and feed people instead of looking for them is come alongside other nonprofits who are already providing a multitude of services, and food just not being one of them. So we have specific places we go to. We know who's going to be there. In the early days, we actually put it on our website, but I've learned that the last thing a person struggling ever gives up, when all else is failing, they've lost their house, their home, the last thing they ever give up is their phone, because that's, in today's world, your last lifeline to anything.
Right. True connection.
So, you know, suddenly we're out somewhere and we're putting it on our Facebook page or we're on our website, and suddenly, you know, we have food for 150 and 250 show up, and we never want to turn anybody away. So, you know, we go out with the food truck. You know, two of the most important things is what we feed and how we feed. What we feed is the idea that feeding people isn't the same as nourishing them.
Right.
You're never going to see a fast food on our truck. Last night was shepherd's pie made with ground beef and ground lamb.
Love
you
it.
Know, fresh roasted vegetables, salad.
Wow. We made some... Looked amazing. You did put us a picture of it. I saw
yeah,
that.
I did. I had a couple of portions. There was a little bit left over. You know, we did. We made some, you know, part of our recovered food program. We got a whole bunch of croissants in, old croissants, and we made some pumpkin bread pudding for this time of the year with ice cream. We must have 100 gallons of ice cream in our freezer donated. It doesn't quite fit into our nutritious meal model, but it's a treat.
Right.
But, you know, what we feed, and the more important, or the equally important thing is how we feed. There's a lot of nonprofits in Orange County do a lot of good. One of them I followed around, and the thing I didn't like about it, they went out and fed someone, and they pulled up beside a dumpster in the back parking lot and started dishing out food. There's no tables. There's no chairs. People were sitting on the curb right beside the dumpster, and that's just, that doesn't work for me. It's great, but for me, no.
Right.
You know, so we tables, chairs, music playing, a safe environment. It's important that the people come here and truly, I mean, we all know that part of the appreciation of a great meal is the environment you're in,
absolutely,
the people you're with. I mean, I had one of the best, you know, the only time I've ever been to the French Laundry after years of dreaming I have Thomas Keller's food was someone that I didn't really want to have dinner with. And I'm pretty sure that had a pretty big impact on
how you did.
I walked away from that. I wasn't quite as blown away as I would have liked to be. And I know it's not Thomas's food.
Yeah.
I know it's the company I was with. So that's really part of enjoying a good meal is all that other thing.
It's the company.
Yeah,
it's the atmosphere. It absolutely
so it's important
is.
To us how we do that.
That's amazing that your care in giving actually extends beyond to where it literally, like you said, is an escape. You're providing a safe haven for people while they are being fed.
Escape for an hour and a half.
And that's all. That makes a big difference for people.
Well, somebody coined a phrase. It's actually on the side of Betsy, delivering hope one tasty meal at a time. And
love it.
I'll get emotional when I talk about this, but these people that have so little in life and the struggles every day. Just, I mean, I know what I struggle with in life, and I'm in a pretty safe world. You know, even though I run a nonprofit and my life has changed drastically, you know, with the changes I've made in my family, but we got a house, we got a home, we got a roof overhead. I have a truck. It's old.
Healthy,
a lot of miles
and
out
happy
of it.
And
got everything I need. Yeah. What these people go through every day just to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can give them an hour to just to have a meal and escape and enjoy themselves, we put games out for the kids to play and just, you know, you forget about life. I mean, it's powerful. And, you know, you talked about the video. There's a part in there that, you know, I didn't realize quite how powerful it would come out. But, I mean, you know, we don't go out and hand somebody a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in a brown bag. We're not giving them some leftovers from, you know, the grocery store or whatever.
Robert's company does that. Every Wednesday they do underprivileged lunches, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for lunches at a school here in Orange County.
And that is absolutely fabulous.
Absolutely.
We try to tell people we love them by the food that we prepare for them. And, you know, I got a little kid out there. His name is Carlos. He wants to be a chef someday. I mean, that may change 10 more times, you know, before he grows up. But because of me and being out there and Betsy and, you know, one day he asked me, he said, Uncle Bill, why do you come out here and feed us all the time? I mean, why do you bring this truck out here? Not old enough to understand the nonprofit idea, but I just said, because we love you and we care about you. He's like, why you? And I'm just like, well, if not me, then who? You know, so, and it's powerful stuff. And I mean, it's done more for me than I do for them. So.
Well, and you're instilling that spirit of giving and by example. I mean, that's a message right there that you're also passing on.
Well, and I hope my kids will see that and I'll have an impact. And I've realized along the way it's not what I set out to do, but I've realized there's a story in what I'm doing. And if I can, you know, somehow encourage or motivate or, you know, whatever, someone else to do something more. I mean,
absolutely.
The world needs more. little less hate and a whole lot more love.
You know, that's exactly right.
Somebody told me a couple of weeks ago, the term was invest in emotion. Mm-hmm. We don't invest in emotion a lot. And this is investing in emotion. This is personal. This is giving of yourself through your calling.
There's a guy in Huntington Beach called Francisco. Francisco's Automotive, and he does all the work on Betsy for free and everything. And, you know, he says it all the time. He goes, I'm a selfish old man. You know, funny. I mean, Francisco looks like he needs help the way. I'm sorry, Francisco. I love you if you happen to hear this. But, I mean, he gives so much back, and he's got a successful automotive company, and the profits he could be making, the vacations he could be taking, and the fancy cars he could be driving, but he chooses, you know, to live a very modest life to use his success for others. And he says, I do it for very selfish reasons. I mean, he's not a selfish man at all, but that's what he says. I'm selfish. I do it for me because it makes me feel good. And I'm more complete and full inside than I ever have been. And, you know, loved my previous career in cooking for the Kobe Bryants of the world and, all those famous movie stars and presidents I've met. Truly blessed, but that didn't fill me up quite the way those kids
did. It's a different kind of reward, isn't it?
Yeah. It's so deep and rewarding. There's no words to describe the completeness inside it. I'm really having an impact on that little kid's life.
We have to reward your other guest here. People keep asking on YouTube, who's the other guest here? You introduced her, and she hasn't said one word the whole show here.
That's Nancy Nguyen.
It's me. Well, you're obviously doing such an amazing thing for our community. And I think that we've talked about kind of sometimes the disconnect between, you know, feeding people and providing food versus also having a full experience and really being involved. And what can people listening do to get involved and really kind of find that bridge between that disconnect between just kind of making a donation versus also coming out and really seeing and experiencing and really getting a feel for how everything is going?
Well, it's interesting to use the word experience two or three times there. We're all have been or in the hospitality business.
It's all about experience.
Exactly. Yeah. It's what we sell.
And, it's in our DNA.
It's everything. And again, that's so important. Do not announce what DNA? I'm sorry. For me, it's, it was really about experience. And part of, again, that was very selfish. I was trying to hold on to this previous life of mine. I mean, you drive into a five-star hotel every day. It's a little different than driving around in a food truck in the poor neighborhoods. But so I was really trying, and it worked out well, the experience we tried to deliver. But, people are afraid. I mean, they worry about homeless people. I got a funny story, and I don't know time-wise.
Plenty of time. We can go long. We're good.
Part of that's my faith. Part of what I set out to do was very specific. I didn't want to deal with people living on the street. And I don't mean to sound mean, but I'm being very honest. I didn't want to deal with the stinky, homeless, alcoholic, drug addict. I wanted to feed the working poor. And as I look back now, I knew, I sold myself a bill of goods that these are the people we want to help. And, we were focused on people living on the economic cliff that had to choose between food and other life necessities on a regular basis. And I sold myself that was our business plan and everything. But the reality was deep inside, I wanted to avoid that. I really did. I kept being pulled toward that. And we, every Tuesday night, 2.5, almost 3 years now, we've been going to this after-school program in Santa Ana. And I got to the point where I'd swing by the Civic Center. And much has changed there, if you know the Civic Center and the homeless situation. Mm-hmm. Much has changed there in the work they've done over the last year. But I had a dozen people, James, John, Ruby, Toma, these people that lived. They didn't want to be in the middle of this mass that was the Civic Center. Right. They were on the outside. So it made it easy for me. I could kind of feed some of them, but not too many of them. And I pulled up Betsy on Flower Street, just south of Civic Center, and I got out and fed them and gave them a package meal. Here you go. Kind of went against everything that I said I was trying to do with experience, but I was helping them.
It was safe, right?
Yeah.
You had a boundary.
Well, it was real safe for me, absolutely. And I was there one night, and you can find this probably on my Facebook page, us singing. I went there one night, and I handed their food out. Ruby was the only woman living there, 58-year-old African-American woman with a bunch of guys living here. I mean, it's just a very unique setup. And, I mean, every time I was there, I was, like, culturally shocked a little bit more. But I handed the food, and I'm like, time to get out of here. How quick can I get on Betsy? Guys, take care. Good to see you. Have a nice day. Enjoy your meal. Bye. And Betsy's like, excuse me, Mr. Bill. I'm like, yeah, can I get one more thing from you? I'm like, sure. What do you need? I'm thinking she needs some forks, some napkins, some glasses. Do you want some water? Can I get a hug? She asked me.
There goes that boundary. That barrier.
I mean, I'm just like, hug. Sure. I gave her a hug.
Changed for life.
And the next guy wanted a hug, and the next guy wanted a hug. And they all suddenly I hugged all of them. I went and got Betsy, and I'm like, I got to get out of there. Normally, I'd be running to the back of Betsy and get the sanitizing solution, and but I couldn't leave. I just felt that these people just need someone to know that someone
need
cares.
A connection.
It's real. It's
yeah.
a real connection.
Yeah, and I went back out. I don't know why I grabbed my selfie stick, because I'm not a selfie stick kind of guy at all. But I, you know, it was a gift, something. I don't know. It was in Betsy, and I went out there and put my camera on, and I sat there. John is an amazing singer, and please, if anybody wants to really understand that, find me on Facebook. I'm all public. I don't hide anything. And find this video of me sitting there and singing Ruby Tuesday to Ruby. And you'll see Tom over there with his mouth full of food and yelling. And I mean, but my God, I mean, these are people like you and I. And, you know, someone once told me that we're all guilty of making the same poor decisions and mistakes in life. Well, yeah. We all do that. Yeah. We all do dumb things.
Yeah.
Problem is, some of us just pay more dearly for them.
Absolutely.
And these people, I haven't met a person yet that said, you know what, when I was 18, I decided I wanted to be homeless and be a drug addict or alcoholic and throw my life away.
Nobody's ever made that decision.
Yeah, and it's just like a series of life things put us in that place. And I mean, that's powerful, Nancy, when you talk about, you know, how you can connect and help and make a difference. And but, you know, sometimes it takes some work to get past the fear and everything. And I had a lot of them. I'm quite certain that most of those people are more afraid of me, this big, tall, bald, goateed wearing guy in a T-shirt showing up. What's he want around here?
Yeah, like,
you know, these homeless population are so sketchy. They were mostly more afraid of me than I was them. But yet, you know, it changed me, and I'm not afraid. I shouldn't say I'm not afraid. I have my moments, but I'll talk to anybody. And what's their story? Everybody,
right?
I mean, everybody has a story.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, it hurts my heart when we, in an affluent community, basically lose the connection with the fact that these are human beings.
Yeah.
That they all have, like to your point, have their a story, and we basically distance ourselves. And some it's through, well, we're just doing a donate money from afar kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that per se, but yes, there's a humanity to this, and we're all a step away. I mean, there's so many people that are literally like on that edge, right? And some of us just pay a bigger price, and we should always be our brother and sister's keeper, I think.
Yeah. Well, and Rod, we're obviously we are in Orange County, and you know, I drove to Beverly Hills for 10 of the 12 years that I worked at the Peninsula, and I got on the 405, I went to work, I ended up in Beverly Hills, and it's Beverly Hills. I come home, I live in Huntington Beach area.
And you're in a pod to a pod.
Yeah, exactly. So you
sanitize get, from everything in between.
And it happens. And, you know, Orange County has these two completely different sides. And, you know, I never, it wasn't in my DNA to turn a blind eye to people or to ignore them or not realize how bad it was. But your life just kind of, I mean, it's Southern California. It's money, fame, success. I mean, how do you define success? It's what the society teaches us in culture. So you have to be willing to say, wait a second, I got to take the time.
Well, sometimes you don't get to choose how your life is going to basically show you your path.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Well, our pastor at church says all the time, if you really want to help others, if you want to care, you just have to be willing to be inconvenienced. And that's the hardest thing
in the
world. We're driving down the 405 freeway and someone's pulled over with a flat tire and they need help, but we're too busy. We got to get someplace. Are you willing to be inconvenienced to help a human being out? And I'm guilty of driving right by those people for years. But you know,
you got to slow it down. You got to help.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? I'm just for myself here. All right.
No.
No.
Come on, help me out. Help me out. I can't help but wonder what the reaction is for people in the Civic Center who are living over the edge, in a tent, alcoholic, drug-infested areas, and you walk up with shepherd's pie. Have they ever seen shepherd's pie? Do they ever look at it and turn their nose and say, where's the french fries and where's the hamburger here? Or how do they react when you walk up with this exotic food?
Well, we do things in a very non-exotic way. You know, our
chef's... You're Irish. Shepherd's pie shouldn't be strange.
Well,
to you,
that's
okay?
True. Yeah, okay, but
it isn't my life.
Whatever it is. You know, I'm just saying, you're serving food that they've never seen before. Now, they're grateful to eat, and they'll accept everything here, but do they say, that was pretty good? Or
I got a good story for that.
You
know, the Chefs Didn't Hunger program, which was started by LA Specialty, when they first started, and they're recovering leftover, over-prepared food from hotels and restaurants. It's a great program. I won't get into it and how it works, but it's just ingenious. Refrigerated trucks picking up leftovers, everything.
Right.
But all the food went to the Midnight Mission in downtown, and when they launched it, they got all of their five-star chefs, chefs from the Four Seasons and the Peninsula, all these places coming down and volunteering and everything. And, you know, I mean, that's where I think part of it is my upbringing in small town Kansas.
You know,
I'm just a country bumpkin at heart, a country boy from Kansas. But, you know, they're suddenly going to the Midnight Mission. They're trying to take these leftovers and turn it into something gourmet. And it's like, there's a guy here who doesn't have any teeth. How's he going to eat this? And, I mean, I'm being serious. Last winter, we got in, I counted them, 450 venison chops from our recovered food program. And I pictured, well, probably my old hotel or someplace like that, someone with a lot of money is putting on their, you know, holiday party. And let's do something fancy this year. Let's do venison chops. Well, nobody eats venison, man. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We got all these leftovers. And, you know, a typical chef maybe at the Midnight Mission would say, I'm going to heat these up and I'm going to make some fancy sauce and put on it. And no one's going to eat them. We cut them off the bone. We diced it up. We made a beautiful stew out of it. And I knew that if we called it venison stew, people might be turned off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was hunter stew.
There you go.
Hunter stew.
And everybody loved it. I remember we served this at Ross Street. I remember everybody going crazy. What was in it? What's hunter stew? It's meat. What kind of meat? Carne. What do you need to know? I mean, they're bugging me. It's like, did you like it? Yeah. And I mean, same thing I do with my 8-year-old. He eats something afterwards. Huh? Did you know you just ate beans, Luke? Those beans aren't beans. It's meat, you know. So, I mean, you know, we just, you know, we got to get creative. And
you do.
And how we can feed them a healthy, nutritious meal without, you know, sometimes them knowing what they're eating.
And to think that, you know, somehow we assume that if you're poor, if you're in need, then you're only going to eat McDonald's or boxed food or leftover stuff that's stale or whatever. You don't qualify for good food.
It's true. I mean, you know what? I ask the question all the time, since when did a tasty, nutritious meal become a luxury in America?
Mm, right.
But the first time we went to Ross Street, in the first couple of weeks, I'll never forget, the kids are asking, are you serving us hamburgers? Do you have sodas? I mean, all these questions of fast food, because the dollar menu at McDonald's, when you're struggling to get by, $4 you can feed a family of four.
Right.
And I remember, you know, going out there, we'd make a simple salad, a Caesar salad or iceberg or something. And I remember the first time I went out there with baby mixed greens, and I threw some roasted almonds in there and some fruit and balsamic vinaigrette. I'm all excited. I brought it all back and threw it away. I mean, they wouldn't touch it. So,
That's what I was kind of wondering.
Two and a half years later, we built some relationships, and that's what's unique about Bracken's Kitchen. We have a connection to the community. We're not putting something in a bag or box and sending it out.
You're out there every day.
Yeah, our salad. Last night we had, we slowly over time, I'm like, okay, all they're going to eat is romaine. I'm sorry, I can't do that all the time. I'm a chef, and I got to.
I can't just do it.
It offends you, right?
Well, I need to be creative. I need to be doing something different. I get bored very quickly. So, just I add a little bit of this to it, a little bit of that every week, a little bit more, and suddenly we can serve them baby mixed greens. But 2 years ago, they wouldn't touch it. But we built trust with them, you know.
Bill, we also forget. I mean, like our palates, you know, developed over time.
Absolutely.
Even if we have an affinity for something that's maybe exotic, it developed over time. It has a lot to do with our surroundings, the environment that we grew in, and, you know, sometimes whatever maybe, you know, indigenous cooking or culinary supplies, right? And all of that stuff. And so when you're in an environment like this, what you're basically doing is you are slowly re-educating their palate.
Well, I think often of Tom Hanks in the movie Big, when he had caviar, if you remember this scene, when he was a big kid. And I grew up in Kansas. I'm sorry, I didn't have caviar. Yeah. I came to love it. I don't get to have it anymore in my lifestyle, but I love caviar. But, yeah, it's the same thing. It's people are used to one thing, and it's so neat and so rewarding to see the change and impact.
And there's your time commitment, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to educate somebody's palate by just showing up once a week and basically handing them something and saying, thank you very much,
yeah,
going on.
Yeah.
So that's where your engagement and commitment is when you're walking the walk, kind of, right? And no, and that's amazing. I mean, because that's really where the real difference happens in somebody's life. And then if you basically then introduce them to an opportunity to learn a skill set that then can basically be helping them get out of that economically, I mean, that's wonderful.
Well, it's all about building relationships.
It's all about building relationships.
I mean, I don't care the most hardened human hearts out there. Everybody just wants to know that someone cares.
Oh, yeah. And at the end of the day, that's it.
Well, that's how our DNA is. See how I use that there? Mm.
Somebody else wants to know, what's the future? More trucks, more cities, more chefs?
We have a pretty clear plan for our future, and you know, our ideal situation in Orange County is our own kitchen, big commercial kitchen, where we're working with our recovered food and we're sending our trucks out. We're big. I always say we're a catering kitchen. We just happen to cater to people who can't pay for it. I want 5 trucks. You know, they'll balance their time between philanthropic feeding for free and catering to earn income so we can keep going. I mean, in today's right. nonprofit world, funders want to know that you have a sustainability model.
Absolutely.
Right. We want at least half of our income to come from our own hard work, you know, sustainability, maybe even more than that. My number, you know, my director of program expansion says it needs to be 75%. I said, can we start with 50? Mm-hmm. and the culinary training program. And when we really get all these pieces together, we want to expand. You know, I have the four places I want to move into is San Diego, Arizona. We haven't decided, is it Orange County in L.A. or is it somewhere in the middle?
Yeah.
But then I want to be back in the Midwest, Kansas City area. I mean, America's farmers have fed the world. And when you see how somebody who used to be a proud farmer in America is struggling just to put a meal on their table back in the Midwest.
Sad,
now, I mean, it's important to me to do something in Northeast Kansas and Northwest Missouri. So, you know, we're not running a
catering shop. A kitchen.
Know.
Now, with the holidays coming up, what is Bracken's Kitchen's plan for
Thanksgiving? How can people maybe volunteer and get involved?
I wasn't expecting this one, but I'm glad you asked it. you know, they're coming out of the woodwork right now. Everybody wants to come out on Christmas and the holidays, and while we appreciate that, I remind people we're feeding and out doing our work 363 other days of the year, not just those two. So, like, for example, what we're trying to do, we're not going out on Thanksgiving. The day, 2 days after, every year out at the pond, there's a big nonprofit event called Give Thanks. They served 13,000 meals last year.
Wow.
They got a lot of leftovers. So we're going to be in our kitchen Thursday and Friday with Waste Not OC and Mike Laricos, who runs that. We're going to be in our kitchen taking all those leftovers and turning them into meals to continue on. And if you're like me, the best part of Thanksgiving when it comes to the food is not Thanksgiving. It's the day after and the leftovers.
Right. Leftovers.
Man, I love my leftover turkey and mashed potatoes and gravy in the microwave. So we want to extend Thanksgiving for these less fortunate. So we're going to be in the kitchen. We don't know. We'll see what we get. Is it turkey pot pie for thousands? Is it turkey stew? Is it leftover? What does it look like?
Go.
So those are some of the fun things we try to do that's different than everybody else. And, you know, other than that, we're just trying to send out as much food and be out as often as we can during the holidays, impacting people's lives. We got a Girl Scout troop that'll come out with us on Ross Street right before Christmas and give away gifts to the kids, so
great.
You know, as well as dinner. So just all sorts of fun things.
How can people get involved, Bill?
Website, again, we talk all the time about time, talent, treasure. I mean,
so they can volunteer, they can donate. There's many ways for them to
basically
be
involved. I mean, basic volunteer to come out. I mean, we got people in the kitchen right now. Some people, you know how to design web. You know, we want to do our website. Great. You want to volunteer and help with our accounting? I mean, that's the talent side. Time, it's just you want to come out and help us serve. And, again, the treasure. One of my dearest friends, a very dear friend, but he's so busy with his work, travels all the time. All he can do is write a check.
Sure.
Visit our website again, brackenskitchen.org. You know, there's a contact form you can fill out. Amanda or a volunteer coordinator or Lane or one of the people will get back to us, and we'll get you engaged.
Somebody wants to know, what's the one thing other than money that you need right now? What would make an impact thing?
What's on your top
wish list?
Yeah, obviously money, a truck, all that stuff. But is there – sometimes we've had charities come in and say, you know, gee, we just need – disposable napkins, or we just need this, or we need that, and there's something that you go through a lot of that somebody could donate?
That's an easy one. It is all the platters and plates and stuff. We actually have an Amazon wish list. Amazon does that for businesses, and there's all sorts of things on there. But, you know, because of our relationship with vendors, we have ample supply of food, but we got to have plates and napkins and glasses and all that stuff.
And you can get all that on the Amazon wish list for
Bracken's
Kitchen.
Yeah, I think it's all on that list, yeah. You know, obviously we try to do a high-quality job, so we don't want to use a flip.
How does the Amazon thing work? You go there, walk through that. So
Amazon Business has a website, and nonprofits can set up their wish list. So I've only worked on the backside of it, so now I'm on the spot here. But I would assume if you went on Amazon Business or Amazon.com and searched for Bracken's Kitchen.
And there's a list of things that you need, and somebody can buy them and donate them. Is that the idea?
Yeah, we try to keep a wish list all the time. Actually, because we hired two new people, there's some computer IT things that we need. But plates, all the normal plates and glasses and stuff we use. I mean, lights. We hang lights out when it's nice.
And if you IT directors, you're replacing equipment, scrub those old notebooks and computers and
absolutely
get them over to Bill. They can use them. Okay. Bill, I wanted to make a donation to the kitchen
wasn't
today.
Wasn't expecting that either.
So no, you weren't. And,
you're full of surprises today.
I am. It's lucky the Irish.
Trying to pack our lunch to go because.
So how did you hear about this, Craig? I mean, you obviously feel
Robert Rycroft, my good friend, and was telling me about Bill, and we haven't seen Robert because he's hiding in the corner.
He refuses to be seen.
Hi, Robert. Here he comes.
There he is.
CFO, Broughton Hotels. Robert Rycroft and I were sitting down talking, and you know, and he sent me a link for a video on YouTube on Brackett's Kitchen, and it moved me. And I called Rod and said, "Let's have Bill on the show. We'll have Robert join us." He's the one that connected us, the 6 degrees of separation of Robert Rycroft. And then Nancy had sent her the video, and we started talking. I told her that you were going to be in the studio. So she goes, I said, "Do you want to come?"
And you yes, let her out of her mouth and talk.
Fast enough.
We have never packed so many people in here. They kept saying we had to turn people away. Everybody wanted to meet you and come down and do this.
Yeah,
we're just excited about this.
You know,
well, because there aren't many charities that make a one-to-one connection. And they do great work. You can donate to pick any of your favorite diseases or whatever here.
Right.
And it's needy and everything else. But I put money into a pool. I never see any result from it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think more and more people are looking for something. I put a dollar in. I see something. It touches somebody.
I want something local, and we've got that. Right. And again, it was a perfect segue going into the holidays.
Sure.
We've got somebody from our collective hospitality world that is making a difference. Mm-hmm. And I've always maintained that, you know, the hospitality sector is the most giving out of any commercial group out there. You know, California's on fire. We're giving people rooms, okay? We're putting the firefighters up, you know, we're
feeding them
everything. Everything, you know, it's
and I don't think that story gets out because I don't hear
it,
that
it doesn't
story
you know unfortunately
not that,
it doesn't
not that they're doing it to get the story out but I don't hear that
and right. it needs to get out because we're also dealing
film
with,
at 11
we're also dealing with something, and I can't speak to other counties, although I'm pretty sure it's repetitive in other counties. Okay, we're dealing with something where this distancing, especially when it comes to the issue of homelessness, when it comes to the issue of people in need that are living on the street, that there's sort of a little bit of a lack of empathy that I'm seeing boil up. There's a language that's starting to stir about basically almost ostracizing these people. I mean, there's language coming from the supervisors in Orange County. There's language coming from certain cities. You know, that
there's sort of a disposed.
But there's part of the language that's positive, and there's a part of it that's almost dismissive, that's almost like marginalizing.
Well, that started last year.
Yeah, regardless, okay, I'm not going down that path for either one of you, right? But regardless what it is, it makes it even more important that we put out stories like this.
Well, you guys, I don't want to turn this into anything remotely political at all. But
thank you.
I never do.
I will.
It all starts with the value of human life. You know, if we don't value human life, each other, you know, that guy living on the street, he has as much a right and a value and intrinsic value.
Sometimes more than I do.
So it's only.
But you know what?
I'm not there.
Bill, I'll share a perfect story with you just because, and it's relevant to, and I'll say it, San Clemente, okay? We have this conversation taking place, and these days with social media being the way it is, these conversations can go off on the off the deep end really quick, and it becomes a mass mob kind of approach. There was a discussion going on. One person basically posts a picture of a particular person. Okay, this homeless person, if you see him, and it's like it starts off like that, and everybody's jumping on that bandwagon. Yeah. About 2 hours into this conversation string, okay, somebody says, "Oh, I know this guy. That's Adam, and he went to high school with me, and he's a local." All of a sudden, this wasn't a transported, dropped off by some other city's police department.
It wasn't one of them.
This is one of us. Boy, did that change the whole conversation.
But the sad thing is they're all one of us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're tied
every
to
single
each
one of
and every one
but
of
the
us.
Point I was making.
Sorry, it just gets me kind of riled up a little bit.
I don't blame
it
you.
It should.
Absolutely.
We had someone from United Way in here.
It's in your DNA.
My DNA is riled up all the time.
A couple years ago, I had somebody from...
watered around out in the desert for generations.
A couple years ago, I had somebody from United Way. They've tackled. They want to cut it in half. That's one of the programs to try and literally cut homelessness in half, I believe, here in Orange County. And they gave the shocking numbers. I don't remember them, but they're shocking figures of how many homeless or near homeless there are in this county, this affluent county here. And I foolishly said to them on air, "Where are they?" And they looked at me and they said, "They're everywhere. You're just driving around them. You choose not to see them." Because we don't live in an urbanized place where we're all on top of each other. They're down in the drain. They're down in the flood control area.
It's not Skid Row downtown L.A. It's not Santa Ana.
I just drive around those areas. I miss it. And so I get the illusion that there is no homelessness here because I don't see it everywhere. I'm not confronted by it.
Well, it goes far beyond the homelessness. It's the people and the children that Bill's taking care of that are, you know, right
motel
there.
Motel families everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. We had Bruno Cerati on, who was famous for feeding hotel kids out of his former restaurant in Anaheim. Yeah. And he, I think it was the White House or
White
whatever
House,
it was.
Yeah.
And he talked about how kids would just started showing up at the back door, and he fed a few, and then there were 10, and there were 100, and there were 1,000. And he said, I didn't know how to stop, and I didn't know if I could afford to do this, but how could you stop? Yeah. And he didn't realize how many kids, these aren't homeless kids, but they're near homeless, they're living in motels.
Right.
And their parents are drug addicts or prostitutes or something,
ask any teacher, okay, in the public school system, and they will tell you that majority of kids, I mean, maybe I would assume even Orange County in certain cities, right? But majority of kids that go to the school are hungry. That meal that they have in the school is the only meal they're having.
Bill may be the only one providing them with that meal.
Well, and I mean, you know, going back to the homeless issue, I'm one of those guys who, like I told you, I didn't want anything to do with that group and that population of people. And at the end of the day, and you know, there was something one of the supervisors suggested. You know, it was in the newspaper recently, went all over Facebook, three parcels of land that the county owns to put up temporary housing tents, something like you do in emergency situations.
Yep, just very recent.
And get them there. And one of them was right next to my church. And I was saddened and shocked by some of the comments that were out there.
In my neighborhood.
Exactly.
Somewhere else.
And, well,
not in my backyard.
Let me finish this thought. I mean, it literally hurt my heart. I mean, it's just like these are people I know, and the reality is, and I got to put my emotions on the side, and you know, kind of come down a couple notches with my arrogance because I'm feeding them. But that was me 5 years ago, you know, that because I didn't know these people, and I've got to know them. And at the end of the day, you know, I always will look for the best in humanity and people. And people that have this problem with homelessness is all rooted in fear.
Yeah,
you know,
the unknown.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no one. I mean, no.
But we
one,
live in a society where we've. It's all about the other, and we're afraid of that. We've gone back to this tribalism. We're afraid
exactly.
of the others.
So it's this fear that drives people. And I mean, if you pass somebody outside the liquor store, buy him a, you know, 7-Eleven or whatever, just buy him a sandwich, hand it to him, talk to him, say hi.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a whole lot of risk on a corner somewhere. And just get to know someone who's homeless. Get to know someone and hear their story. I told you earlier the story of David, whose mother died of a kidney failure, and she wouldn't take her son's kidney.
Yeah.
She wouldn't let him donate it. And that sent him down a spiral path. He's living on the streets now because he couldn't deal with the death of his mother.
Mm-hmm.
These stories are amazing. They're no different than you and I. But
Can I ask you one thing?
You wouldn't know if you didn't ask.
Yeah, exactly.
You've
got to take the time.
Can I ask you one thing?
Not for the grace of God.
Could you run for president next? No, we won't go there.
Somebody needs to.
He did turn
Finally.
The corner.
Finally, we got it. All right.
Well, in 4 years, somebody will need you again, right?
Yeah.
3 years?
Okay. I'm a citizen. I was born here. I'll do it. I'm not a schmuck. I'll put country first, and we're going to take care of everybody.
That's the key. So,
that's Craig Sullivan, and he endorses the message.
Yeah, I do endorse that message. So.
No, that's
well, and we
Thanks for sharing so personally Bill, because I think that's really what people need to hear. You know, I was in Austin over the weekend for a wedding for a friend of mine, and the guy that she was marrying, I met a couple of times, didn't really know anything about him, right? It was a very personal kind of wedding, small, you know, they got married under a big oversized tree that looked like it had a swing on it at one point. You know, it was just very, very cool. Then the speeches or people were talking about it, and somebody was basically talking about him and her and all this stuff. You know what's interesting? They set up a whole bunch of stuff about him, right? The thing that resonated with me the most is when somebody basically said, they have seen him many times basically stop and buy somebody a sandwich and give it somebody. Just to stop and care about another human being.
Kindness.
In passing in your daily life, right?
The good Samaritan.
And it's amazing. And I don't know the guy, but I know my friend, and I'm thinking, she got a real steal with this guy. I mean, a real good guy there. And we need more of those stories. We need to tell people it's okay to step out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
You're a perfect example of it.
Yes, exactly.
No, you won't regret it. I can promise you that. I mean, I put a post on Facebook the other day. It's like, man, I mean, take the chance. It'll change your life forever. I mean,
for the better.
And it could change their lives.
Yeah, it could change their life.
Nancy.
Well, you've changed our lives. Give us a website again. We've got to wrap up.
Www, we're supposed to say, brackenskitchen.com or .org. Either one of them takes you to the same
Bracken,
place.
Spell Bracken, just for everybody's clear.
B-R-A-C-K-E-N-S, kitchen.org.
BracketsKitchen.org.
And look out for the big red truck with the word Betsy on the side.
Get out of Betsy's way when she's coming through.
Yeah, wave at her when you see her going by.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She'll honk at you.
You want to get a hold of Robert Rycroft, you could reach him at Broughton Hotels, and that's BroughtonHotels.com.
And thank you, Robert and Broughton, for your support.
Yes.
Nancy, how do people get a hold of you?
Park West. I am with Park West General Contractors. You can get a hold of me at parkwestgc.com.
And Greg?
You can get a hold of me at Craig at CLI Conference for the California Lodging Investment Conference.com. Yes. Or you can reach me at parkwestgc.com as well.
When's that conference coming up?
That is coming up March 8th.
Right. So, and look out for his new website coming soon, Greg for President 2018.
Yeah. Do you think hotels, I know we're supposed to wrap up, but a quick question for all of you. Is the hotel industry embracing more of this? You've talked a lot about how they're trying to be more local and involved. They're not just trying to be a chain that arrives and is disconnected with the community. They're trying to get more involved.
Robert can comment on that if he chooses to, because their hotels do a lot of charity.
You know, I mean, is this a trend? Are we moving the tech industry?
Not a trend. It's part of it. It's always
part
been
of
our
there.
DNA.
Yeah, I don't know that the big change did or didn't do that, but it seems like as you talk about being more involved in the community, it seems like there's an opportunity for local hotels and hospitality to do that. Maybe they're already. So
you know,
you got to get right up here.
We as a company do it, but honestly, a lot of hotel companies are out there doing it. Every time it gets mentioned, somebody else is jumping on board and getting involved. So
it's growing.
Like Craig said, because it's the hospitality we give, and we give to the homeless and anybody that'll take it. So
okay, all right. Well, thanks for giving of your time to come down here today and tell us this story here. All right,
Thanks, everybody, for being here.
Everybody. Thank you for being here very much, my co-host. That we missed the show because I was at the Arizona Lodging Conference, so we need to do a makeup show and maybe recap the year. And
yep. That's exactly that'd be a great idea.
So it's always a pleasure back to be in the room.
We actually were up in Concord. What was it last week?
Yeah, last week for the CLIA conference.
At the CLIA conference, and there was a lot of interest in the show. I think a lot of people are just by nature of human beings are looking for a way to be involved and engage and give of themselves beyond just the 9-to-5 sort of how you describe yourself. And I think that is a trend that I'm really happy to see just in general with people, is that I want to be more than just what I do for a living. How else can I help? How else can I give my neighborhood? And so, again, check out BrackensKitchen.org or .com.
.org.
And check out all the exciting stuff that they're doing, because I guarantee you, whether it's Bill's organization or any other nonprofit, the reward that you will get from volunteering and taking part in something like this will be different from any
priceless
other kind of monetary reward you get, and it will change your life.
Absolutely.
All right, time's
Thanks
up.
Thanks for being here, Bill.
Thanks,
Thank
Bill.
You.
Thank you,
everyone.
Guys.
Thanks.
Thank you for being our guest today on Check Out California. We look forward to having you as a guest with us again in 2 weeks. Until then, you can always reach us through our Check Out California Facebook page or by emailing us at checkoutcalifornia@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. So do let us know what you think of the show and what areas of interest you'd like to see us cover in the future. Your feedback is very important to us as we continue to bring you the best hospitality our Golden State has to offer. Until next time, may all your days be filled with sunsets and palm trees. Now, go experience and check out California.